shortwave, AM, FM, and the internet. This is PCJ. Yeah! It's now time for the Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Perrone.
Oh, no!
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the International Happy Station Show. It's really nice to have you with us for the next 55 minutes. We have a very special guest on the show today because this guest is someone who I've known for, wow, I can't believe it, nearly 20 years. He's worked on the stage. He's worked in radio. He has a number of CDs to his credit. He has also appeared in film. It is U.S.-born, but Canadian jazz vocalist, George Evans, my special guest on the show today. And I'll tell you a little bit more about this after we take a listen to him singing a song that is appropriate for this time of year, because many of you are wishing that summer would come early. I am certainly one of them. Now, despite the fact that we don't get snow here in Taiwan, we have been getting a lot of rain, and it's been very damp, which is doing havoc to my joints. It certainly is. Indian Summer, George Evans, here on the International Happy Station.
Summer, you old Indian summer, you're the tear that comes after June time's laughter. You have so many dreams that won't come true, dreams we fashioned when summer time was new. You are here to watch over a heart that is broken by a word that somebody left unspoken. You're the ghost of a romance in June, going astray, fading too soon. That's why I say farewell to you, Indian summer. Thank you. you old Indian summer. You're the tear that comes after June time's laughter. You have so many dreams that won't come true. Dreams we fashioned when summer time was new. You are here to watch over a heart that is broken by a word that somebody left unspoken. You're the ghost of a romance in June, going astray, fading too soon. That's why I say farewell, farewell, farewell to you, Indian summer. Summer, you're the ghost of a romance in June, going astray, fading too soon. That's why I say farewell, 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 you old Indian summer.
Jazz vocalist George Evans, our special guest on this edition of the International Happy Station. Now, before we get to George, there's two things that I want to tell you about. First is the next edition of Media Network Plus with Paulette McQuarrie and myself will be for the 29th of January. The first transmission on that date will be taking place at 100 hours UTC, directed to the Caribbean and Latin America on 9,955 kilohertz. And that's the next edition of Media Network Plus, January 29th at 100 hours UTC on 9,955 kilohertz. You can also catch the program at various different times. Just go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com. Once again, www.pcjmedia.com. Now, the second thing, as I mentioned at the top of the show, our special guest today is jazz vocalist George Evans. And I call him Canadian jazz vocalist, but actually he was born in the United States. Now, before we get to the interview, I want to mention that the interview heard on this edition of Happy Station is a shorter version. You can hear the full-length version and listen to a lot more of George's music on the next edition of Jazz for the Asking. So you can hear the full interview of Jazz, of George Evans, that is, on Jazz for the Asking here on PCJ and one of our number of partner stations. And you can also listen to the show via our website beginning January the 24th, and it will be broadcast on the 29th, 30th, and 31st of January. Now, George was born in the United States. Now you're thinking, oh, jazz vocalist. He must come from a place like New York. No, 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 no. I just heard somebody say to me, what about Los Angeles? You couldn't be more far off. Seattle? Good thought, but no. He happens to be from the home of the one and only Doris Day. And if you don't know where Doris Day is from, she is from Cincinnati in Ohio. Yes, you heard me correctly. A jazz singer from Cincinnati, Ohio. Well, my first question to George was, is there a jazz scene in Cincinnati?
Cincinnati's a great medium-sized town in the Midwest. So nothing could be construed as large by big city standards. But we were a hub for broadcasting and recording going back many, many years. And there was a wonderful club scene established back then. People who would play the radio and television market, who would be performing live in clubs. Some wonderful performers came out of Cincinnati. Is there a big jazz community now? Probably not. But jazz has diminished in a lot of the medium-sized towns to where you really have to work to find it.
So for yourself, then, what were you listening to when you were growing up in Cincinnati?
Well, we had opera in the house because my parents worked with opera singers. My sister and I had to listen to many, many hours of opera. And so my ear was geared toward older music, older sound. I fell in love with big band and swing music as a small kid and listened to a lot of Broadway musicals. That's what my folks brought home for us to educate us about American music. So we had popular standards recordings and Broadway and big band to listen to as an adjunct to all that classical music. I listened to that pretty much growing up until I hit my early teenage years when all of us were listening to pop radio. And after that, I listened to a mix of black American music and rock music, pop, funk, disco, soul. Mostly my ear was geared toward black music, black singers, listening to the great sounds of the R&B soul stations on AM radio. We had WCIN. I used to go to their events. As a teenager, I was more involved in the black community events than the white community events. So for me, there's just such a wonderful combination of legit singing, beautiful chordal music, the fun sounds of big band and swing, and then the gritty edge of black North American music. And that pretty much typifies the people who come out of Cincinnati and did back in the day.
How much of those different music forms, let's say from opera to songs from the Broadway stage to R&B music, to other musical styles that you were growing up listening to, how much of that influenced you and has influenced you today?
When I started listening to standard singers, my ear was tuned to good singing, to singing with vocal technique. You might even say operatic voices. A lot of what I listen to influences my choices today. I listen for a well-constructed song. I want a melody. I want good chordal structure. Not really into two and three chord songs. So the pop rock era, everything after 1965, it isn't an easy sell for me. You really have to work through the initial pop rock singer-songwriter era, those 20 years in there, where the music just got dumbed down to such an extent. It's very popular music. People still want to hear us do those songs, and you can. But initially, my choices were from the American popular standard repertoire of great composers and all those other composers who wrote fine songs. So I suppose the question was, did my background influence the musical choices I make now? And I would have to say yes.
Many people have said that the popular standards format or jazz is really the American version of classical music. If you listen to any recording from Ella Fitzgerald, you could really put her on the same stage as some of the great ladies of opera in many ways.
Yes, you could. There are singers whose instrument would be more of an easy comparison, like Sarah Vaughan or Morgana King, or there are people who had really legit sounds, Teddy King, people who had really legit voices that you could put on a stage with an opera singer on a mixed program and it wouldn't be unusual. That's just about the voice. Musically speaking, repertoire, American popular standards are America's classical music. There are several streams of music that are completely indigenous to North America and the United States in particular that spread around the world. But interestingly enough, Americans, the American classical music form of popular standards is sorely neglected in North America. There's been a resurgence, but it was the interest abroad in Europe and Asia that kept the music alive and gave it the credibility back in its home country. So it's fascinating how that worked. Absolutely. If you look at the great catalogs of Jerome Kern and George Gershwin and Irving Berlin and so on and so on, these great catalogs of songs, songs that stand alone, where those shows may have lost their credibility because they're so dated, so the scripts have become dated, but the pieces written as a musical piece retains so much integrity, the songs stand on their own as great compositions, and in many cases the shows do too. This is music making at its pinnacle. They were cranking out songs. There was such activity in composing because there was a huge market for the music, a market that extended beyond the stage and went into radio and prior to radio, prior to the dissemination of music over the airwaves and records, people played songs at home from sheet music. That's where the new songs went. But when you think of how that all built on itself, from the home musician to the vaudeville stage, to the Broadway musical stage, to recording and radio and television and film, the market for the music just increased to such an extent that new songs were needed all the time. The activity in composing this music was so great that the brilliance could do nothing but grow. And they all learned from each other, and they set the bar very high. The lyrics can be exquisite. The melodies can be beyond compare. Mind you, there is a reasonably large amount of drivel that is equal or greater than the number of fine songs. But that, if you look at Mozart and Salieri, what Salieri wrote is considered to be pretty much disposable now. And he was celebrated in his day, and Mozart was not. So there are composers like Salieri who filled up the marketplace with what we now know was not excellent music. But the fine compositions by people like Mozart are so numerous that the catalog is enormous. It's the same thing with American popular music.
A few months ago, I interviewed a jazz presenter at NHK in Japan, and I was asking him why this music form was so popular, not just in Japan, but in Asia. And he said it boils down to the lyric. He said, because the singers who normally perform these songs, they sing it very clearly. The lyric means something, and the audience can appreciate it differently than, let's say, a North American audience. Would you agree with that?
I think I would. With the Japanese audience in particular, this is an audience that is a deeply feeling, contemplated, sensitive, musical audience. They listen very carefully. They have subtle ears and a sensitive spirit. The lyrics in fine American popular songs have story and excellent rhyming. The artists who choose this material to sing, the art in developing a repertoire is choosing something that means something to you as a singer. So when you hear an artist like Tony Bennett sing American popular songs, he's taken great care to select something that has a story that he can tell. So when you listen to an artist like Ella Fitzgerald or Tony Bennett or whomever in your list of your favorite 50 singers, these singers have worked very hard to come up with the right musical repertoire choices for them, lyrics that have something that they can say and mean. When there are so many songs to sing, so much to choose from, why would you choose something that has no meaning to you? Why choose something that isn't a story you need to tell? That's the difference between a superlative recording artist and a mere pop singer.
You'd better love me while you may, for I've been known to fly away. I want your gentle touch, your continental touch, your elemental touch. You want me to, oh, I know that you do. You'd better love me while I'm here, for I've been known to disappear, dear. Don't let this miracle melt away. The clock ticks fast above me. If you think fondly of me, you'd better love me. With a silent plea from another time, another place, another me. You called me back and I found my way to a half-remembered, half-forgotten yesterday. You'd better love me while you may. Tomorrow I may fly away. Your gentle touch, your continental touch, your elemental touch. Oh, you want me to, oh, I know that you do. You'd better love me while I'm here, for I've been known to disappear. So don't let this miracle melt away. Clock ticks fast above me. If you think fondly of me, you'd better love me while you may. You'd better love me while you may. For tomorrow I may fly away. You better love me, love me, love me, love me, love me, love me. Watch out, my dear, for I might disappear in a puff of smoke, something rather like this.
You'd Better Love Me, George Evans, from his CD From Moment to Moment. And later on in the show, I will be giving out the URL for George Evans's website. And you can actually find it right now, at this very moment, by going to pcjmedia.com. You'll see it up there. But I'll give it out anyway, in case somebody is like, oh, I'm too lazy to go to your website. Well, that's my impression of a certain listener that we have. You know who you are, and I know you're having a good laugh out of that. Okay, now time for my continuing conversation with George Evans. And George left Cincinnati and made his way to New York. And this is where we pick up the story.
When I was in university, there weren't what you'd call university-level training programs for popular singers, jazz singers, standard singers. It's not a career that people were prepared for in the university system. It was also a time when we were automatically channeled into the universities, whether you were going to have a career in medicine or you're going to have a career in music, they immediately channel you into the university system. Now, my parents taught at a university. They were both on the faculty at a music school, so it was understood that I was going to go to college. What was available to me was a music theater program, also a career that is marginally existent. And what I trained for and what I found when I got to New York City were two different things. I was in music theater because at least we were dealing with American songs and American music and interpreting it through song and dance. And I studied acting, and I studied classical and modern and theater dance, and I studied classical voice and keyboard and all of the things that they gave us a grounding in at this fine music school. The first degree program in music theater in the United States was in Cincinnati, where I attended. I was given the tools to understand the composer and the lyricist and what they needed to convey, what they were trying to convey. I was given the tools as a performer, as an actor, to get under the skin of something. What we weren't given at the time was any kind of a grounding in solo performance. So I was trained to work as a member of ensemble. At least that was the plan. And it was never easy for me to share the stage with other people.
You just mentioned something a moment ago, that it gave you training to learn what the composer was trying to say, what the lyricist was trying to say. Could you listen to a song now by a singer and say to yourself, this singer has no idea what he's singing about?
Absolutely. You hear that within the first 16 bars. Sometimes you'll hear a song that is coming out of the mouth of an artist, and the song choice is so irrational, the contradiction is so great, it doesn't even make sense that that person would be uttering those words. Or the singer is so young, and that's pretty much the norm. Because the music industry, the big labels, the machine of it all, is about creating careers at the youngest possible age. I've often joked that the singers are becoming younger every year on record, to the extent that the next big thing will be a singing fetus. Because she's younger, she's newer, she's brighter. And singers that I won't name, but, you know, here's this great scatting star at age 12 who's repeating verbatim an entire performance amalgamated from an Ella Fitzgerald performance. Now, there's no creativity in that. And when I hear a 12-year-old or an 18-year-old or a 22-year-old or even a 25-year-old sing one of the darkest songs or most emotional songs from the American Popular Standards repertoire, I don't really care that the PR machine is telling me that they're a great artist. And I'm not thrilled or excited when they tell me that I should be, because this young person is interpreting on the level of a Peggy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Because Peggy Lee lived a life of hell in many ways, and when Peggy Lee sang a ballad or a love song, the emotion there came from her experience. So don't tell me that a 22-year-old whose most painful moment was missing the sale at the mall is able to convey the sensitivity and the pain of a lyric of Love Lost. It's, I'm being really, really mouthy about this, but what it comes down to is that we are storytellers relating our emotions, relating our experiences, or finding connections to our own emotions. And as a listener, just as a listener, I'm moved by the performance of an adult who has a well of experience and intellect and emotion to bring to the 3 to 5 minute performance of an American popular song.
You heavenly thing, you look so wonderful. You're like a breath of spring. You leave me speechless. I'm just like the birds. I'm filled with melody, but at a loss for words. That lovely grin of yours, the noble chin of yours, do so much to my heart. Oh, darling, look at me, for surely that would be the final touch to my heart. You leave me breathless. That's all I can say. I can't say more because you took my breath away. Breathless, dear, that's all I can say, because you're a heavenly thing. You look so wonderful beside me this way, a delightful breath of spring. You leave me speechless, I am just like a bird, to rock and to make himself heard. I'm filled with melody, but breathless, no doubt, and distinctly lost for the words. Oh, that lovely sly and bookish grin of yours, the grand and noble chin of yours, do so much to my heart, my dear. You simply have to look at me, and that would be the last of me, the final touch to my heart. You leave me breathless, that's all I can say. I can't sing more because you took my breath away. I can't sing more because you took my breath away.
You Leave Me Breathless, the incredible George Evans, our special guest on this edition of the International Happy Station Show. If you wish to get in touch with us, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com. I should mention right now that a number of you at this very moment probably have received or will be receiving in the next couple of days a special thank you gift for showing your support to us for last year and so on. We've actually managed to locate one of the original QSL cards from the early days of Happy Station. When I mean early, the early 1960s, with Eddie Starts on the cover. And we sent out, I think maybe a few hundred of them out to a number of you. So let us know when you get it to make sure that we actually have your right address. So look out for that in your mail. Also, and you'll be receiving some other trinkets as well. Okay, let's now continue with our special guest today, George Evans, here on the International Happy Station. Let me mention some singers, some composers, and I want to get your initial reaction. I'll begin with, let's say, the two obvious ones. George Gershwin, Cole Porter.
Brilliance personified. And two completely different individuals who both pretty much carry the core of the Great American Songbook.
Now, what about arrangers and conductors of this music who made it popular? Somebody like, let's say, Nelson Riddle or Billy May or Cy Oliver.
Well, when we're talking about arrangers, we're talking about the records. And when you mention the arrangers of that day, I think of those people as the men and women who established the legacy of the American popular song. Those songs were being revived and recorded for posterity at that point. When I think of arrangers, we're also talking about mostly popular music, the popular recordings, as opposed to jazz explorations and deconstructions and spontaneous interpretations of those songs by instrumentalists or live club dates or small group recordings by singers where there's not an arranger. So when you talk about an arranger, we're talking about one person's vision of a song. Nelson Riddle was brilliant because what he did was very transparent. There's his sound, and his sound can support nearly anything from the American Popular Songbook, and it will have the Nelson Riddle sound that supports but doesn't impose anything. It's always supportive, never obtrusive. Billy May would support, but you know you're listening to Billy May, and his sense of humor overrides a lot of the original intent of the songwriter. When you listen to Richard Rodgers arranged by Billy May, you're not hearing what Richard Rodgers had in mind. You're hearing a very humorous take. There's always humor in a Billy May arrangement. You mentioned Cy Oliver, not an arranger who's ever really spoken to me, so I don't have a lot to say on the subject of Cy Oliver. Very square. He's got a certain sound, but it's never been a style that has motivated me to want to get into those recordings or arrangements. And I haven't particularly wanted to sing Yes Indeed. Mm-hmm. But there are so many fine arrangers who could do somewhere in between, supporting the original intent of a number or going in the direction of putting their stamp on it. The reason that Nelson Riddle is the benchmark is that his personal style is so transparent that you could listen to anything he's arranged, know Nelson Riddle arranged it, but also totally hear what the composer had in mind.
Let's move to someone who was an actor, he was a singer, he was a composer, and also entertainer. You might giggle when I mention his name, but that would be, let's say, Anthony Newley.
The giggling is only because of Anthony Newley's singing technique, which doesn't involve taking his regional accent away at all.
and his vowels make me smile. But that aside, he wrote some wonderful music, and he performed it himself very, very well. And not everyone is able to sing an Anthony Newley song and do it justice, because he wrote them for himself. And he's a very particular personality. There's a particular slant on how to tell a story. You might say he's self-indulgent to sing one of those personal Anthony Newley numbers and have them work would be about having the personality to stand up to the lyric and not get sucked into the potential self-indulgence in the story.
What about female vocalists like Billie Holiday, Nina Simone?
Why those two in particular?
Well, those two, a lot of people would say, especially with Billie Holiday, in particular later recordings that she made, because of the turbulent life that she led, she was really, in many ways, some people would say, singing the song, but really talking about her own experience.
I think there was sort of a fascination with Billie Holiday in those last 10 years. The fascination was kind of that of people driving by a roadside accident, where you know something horrible is going on, you can only catch a glimpse of it, you want to look, but you want to look away. That's part of it. But as an interpretive vocalist, Billie Holiday was unable to keep her personal pain out of her singing. She didn't have any choice. She kept singing through horrible things, and it was therapeutic, and it was what she presumably was living for. And when you hear those later recordings of Billie Holiday, people actually knew what she was going through. And people actually knew and suspected that the pain they were hearing was real. And I don't think that the broad American public as a whole had a sense of how much that added to a performance until they heard those kinds, until they had the kinds of experiences of listening to a Billie Holiday sing at the peak of her adult pain.
One final question, George. If you can take a song from any of your CDs to end off this interview, what would it be?
To answer your question, there's a song that closes out the Bewitched album. So the last studio recorded song on my last studio album. It's a little known number, one of many, many little known numbers that Johnny Mercer wrote. It was recorded only once before by Nancy Wilson on one of her many, many albums for Capitol in the 60s. And I closed out the album with it because it felt very much at the time like it might be my last chance to say something. And still, as the end of that album, it is the last word on that project. So as a performer and as a person living in the moment, each time I get on stage, it feels like, and it should feel like, it could be the last. And so every minute on that stage, I enjoy every bit of that energy. And I treat it as though that is the last time I will ever sing. And the name of the song is Tonight May Have to Last Me All My Life.
George Evans, thank you very much for joining us on Jazz for the Asking this week.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a treat.
Hold me close to you and say you love me too. Tonight may have to last me all life. Leave a memory to keep me company tonight. May have to last me all my life. And when I'm alone without you, to dream about you. Every hour you stay will make that I'll see going past me all my life. So have no regrets. Darling, don't forget tonight may have to last me all my life. Every hour that you stay will make a dream bouquet that I'll see going past me all my life. So have no regrets, and my darling, don't forget tonight may have to last me.
Tonight may have to last me all my life, George Evans, from his CD, Bewitched. If you want to find out more about George Evans or order his music or find out where he's performing, especially if you're in the Toronto area in Canada, his website is www.pcj. No, that's not. That's my own website. His website. I'm getting confused. His website is www.georgeevans.ca. Yes, that's it. I should have known that. www.georgeevans.ca. Oh, it is one of those shows. That's the only thing I can tell you. And the reason is I've had so much caffeine today. And there is a reason for that. We're in the middle of preparing the next edition of Media Network Plus. And this show is a little bit more complicated. It has a very long script. And I've been drinking so much caffeine to keep me awake that now I'm kind of going, boo! But that's a whole other story. Anyway, once again, George's website, www.georgeevans.ca. Our website for Happy Station and PCJ and all the other PCJ programs like Nash Holos, The Stuff File, The Kelly Alexander Show, Switzerland in Sound, Yesterday, Today's and Tomorrow's from a good friend, Neil Hendricks in South Africa, is www.pcjmedia.com. You see, I knew I'd get it. www.pcjmedia.com. Now, before we end off, I want to remind you again about two things. First, the interview that you heard today here on Happy Station, you can catch the full interview on the next edition of Jazz for the Asking. And that show will be made available for download on the 25th of January. And will be broadcast on our partner stations the 29th, 30th, and 31st, as well as through PCJ Radio. The next thing is the January edition of Media Network Plus will be for the 29th of this month. The first transmission of that program will be at 100 hours UTC and will be directed towards the Caribbean and Latin America. So the January edition of Media Network Plus is on the 29th of this month, with the first transmission taking place at 100 hours UTC, directed to the Caribbean and Latin America on 9,955 kilohertz. So, on behalf of our technician, Kevin Lee, our production assistant, Johan Backer, who's been very busy with me the last week, sending out those QSO cards and greetings and everything else, this is Keith Perron, all the way in Taipei, Taiwan, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.